price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees and pray. You can say goodbye to the good old days. They're never coming back. Watch a future fade.
What's happening, everybody? What's going on? It's Monday night. It's 10 p.m. on the East Coast, 7 p.m. on the West Coast. And in between, it's all kinds of other time sandwiched in there in the middle. What's happening, you guys? Welcome to Plum Love Foods Live. I am your host. My name is Chef Plum. I'm a father. I am a station head addicted general human being. We'll talk about that later on. But more importantly for this program, I am a professional chef in the wonderful world of the hospitality industry. That's what I do for a living. Ladies and gentlemen, I cook food, and I get paid for it. I get paid to put a roof over my head, and I get that money that I cook food that I get paid to make, I use to buy things. So that makes me a professional. That's what I do. I don't know why I sound so angry. I'm not angry at all. I hope you guys are having a great Monday. It is. What's today's date? Today is February 27th, 2017. Can you believe that, man? It just sounds crazy to even just say 2017. Are you shitting me? Dude, I never thought I'd get past 21, much less be getting ready to have my 39th birthday next week. Are you kidding me? That's crazy talk, right? Not quite 40, but getting close. Getting close, that's for sure. Hope you guys are having a great day. I am here. I have rushed home. I have poured myself a beverage. I am still on my regimented hardcore workout program and seeing some results, I might add. But I'm also having my one day where I cheat a little bit and have some beers. And Mondays is the day where I work 12 hours. I don't go to the gym, but I come home and have a couple beers while I do this very program. So here's to you. Swig a beer for all the people out there. It's good beer. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have a great guest on tonight. We have Eric Offgang coming on. Eric is a senior writer for Connecticut Magazine. He's a great person. He's a very influential human being in the food scene here. Connecticut Magazine is a giant magazine, so it's a lot of fun to have him on. I really want to talk a lot about digital versus print and just, get his opinion on that sort of stuff, because that's what he does. I mean, their magazine, their print magazine, as far as I know, is based off of popular online content for the online version of their magazine. So it's going to be cool to talk to him about that stuff. Excited to bring that up and, you know, just kind of get more info. He's also written a book called Buzz, Beers, Booze, and Coffee Brews. So it's called Where to Enjoy the Best Craft Beverages in New England. So it's pretty cool to see that sort of stuff, man, and talk to him. He's a published author, which is pretty amazing. So great conversation to have with this guy tonight. Oh, man. What's happening in your world? Me? A lot. A lot of things have happened. As you can see, we did not take the deal to go to this program to regular radio. That we ended up not doing that. And it was my decision. It was completely my decision. And the reason why is that it doesn't work out. This is a much better scenario right now for me. So I want to continue doing it this way for now. It doesn't mean it won't change. But for now, this is what we're going to continue to do. Listen, and the regular radio thing, it's dying. It's a dying media. It really, really is. I mean, to get someone to listen to an online stream of a radio program, while not that difficult or that different than listening to this program this way, it's just, it seems different when you do it because a lot more restrictions. You know, like right now, if I want to say fuck, I'm going to say fuck because I can. I don't have to worry about anything else. I'm saying it because I can. On the other radio, I couldn't do that. And I don't like that, man. It's 2017. There's no reason to be restricting people. I don't know. It just seems dumb. The whole thing seemed dumb. And, you know, and the other thing is, too, is that, you know, I don't like being told how to do things. I want to do it my way. I've been successful doing this program this way, so I'm going to continue doing it this way for now. I mean, there's lots of other formats coming out. You guys have seen on social media, talking a lot these days about this awesome app called Station Head. It's pretty freaking cool, man. You can make your own radio station, it links to Spotify, and you can put all your own channels on, all your own songs on there. It's made by one of the inventors, I guess. Are you an inventor when you make an app? Are you an inventor? Are you the idea guy, the designer? I don't know. The guy definitely didn't like program the app or build it, because that's not what he does. But basically his idea, our good friend Ryan Starr, friend of the program, been on here before. He'll probably be on here again very soon. Great guy, great musician, very talented gentleman. It's his app. And he let me know what was going on. He was like, Chef, you got to get on here. And I tell you what, man, I have been on nonstop. And we just got, ladies and gentlemen, our good friend, friend of the show, great guy all around, Chef Kevin Levine, Chef's, aka Chef Scatore. He just did his first day today being on Station Head. And we've talked a little bit. He's addicted to it. You can't stop. So if you want to get down with it and check it out, let us know. Shoot me a message. It's not public yet. It's still in beta, but if you want to get down and check it out, shoot me a message and I am happy to give you an invite code so you can check it out before it blows up. It's going to change social media. I'm telling you, it's going to change social media. Just the way the whole thing works. It's nuts, dude. It's absolutely amazing. So I hope you guys want to check it out. So another big thing happening in my world. I don't know. So we'll talk about this. Why not? So April 1st, April Fool's Day. We haven't announced it yet. I think we will probably the 1st of March. We are doing a pop-up dinner, ladies and gentlemen. Woohoo! Finally, pop-up dinner back with your boy Chef Plum. We're going to be at Ergo Chef Knives in Danbury. Very exclusive dinner. I think we're going to do 25 or 30 people. I can't remember what they want to do, but it's going to be really, really cool, man. We're going to do some awesome food. The menu is out freaking standing. I'm very excited about this dinner. And more importantly, excited about hanging out with the great people over at Ergo Chef. These guys are phenomenal guys, supporting, you know, a local knife company. Just, I don't know, I you guys know, I've mentioned it before, I talk about them on this show all the time. I love the knives, I love the guys over there. What they're doing is just, it's great stuff, man. So excited to go over there, do a dinner. We're going to try to get some attention for these guys and make some amazing food. Much like, you know, I did, it's funny because they don't have a kitchen in their warehouse where we'll be doing the dinner. But I did two dinners with Two Roads. I think I was the last chef to do a full-on dinner there. But we won awards for it, where we actually had to build a kitchen in their growler room, which is pretty sweet, especially when you're trying to figure out the venting situation, because it was one of those situations where not a lot of windows around. But we figured it out. I MacGyvered it. That's what I do. I MacGyver things to make them work. And not because I'm a smart guy. Just because at the moment I have to see something before somebody else sees it. That's the only reason why it actually worked. But it did. It was awesome. So I look forward to doing that one. And we're going to talk a lot more about that as we get closer. Maybe we'll even broadcast on Station Head, and then we might do a live show from here as well on that. And it's going to be cool. I'll tell you what, you guys, I know that we get a lot of attention for all the New York festivals we do, the New York Best Wings Festival, the Bacon and Beer Classic. Oh, such a fun festival. One of the biggest in the country. Such a fun festival. I love judging it. But last year, I had way more fun doing the radio show live from there. But we're going to do it again, all these festivals, but on a much bigger scale this year through Station Head, which is going to be more to talk about as we move forward. You guys got to jump on Station Head because it's awesome. But we're going to jump on that. I think this program is going to do a live broadcast from there. We might do some recording also for the podcast as well. But going to these events, talking to all these cool chefs, talking to all these cool personality type people and have the chance to be there. It's so much fun. And you guys know, hanging out with Chris Santos at the New York Hot Sauce Expo and doing the judging together. It's such a great time. And those live shows we do always do really, really well. But we're going to do a live show, I think, on Station Head this year. So we got to talk more about that and get you guys involved, because this app, I'm telling you what, it's in beta. It's not public. It's going to be public soon. If you want to get on and check it out, shoot me a message, DM me, however you want to get in touch with me, and I can get you an invite code to check it out, because it's so cool. And I look forward to doing it, man. It's kind of the whole thing's kind of based off of there was a movie back in the early 90s called what was that shit called? Pump Up the Volume with Christian Slater, where he had a pirate radio station. He called himself Happy Harry Hard On. A great movie, fantastic movie. And the whole thing kind of came from that, which is really, really cool. So I know it's a weird segue, but can you tell I'm excited about this thing, man? I went and cooked amazing food today, did some really, really fun stuff in the city, and here I am all just talking about this stupid app that I can't get enough of right now, which is it makes me strange and weird and oh so many different ways. But ladies and gentlemen, I am going to get my ducks in a row because I see our guest right now on hold, our good friend Eric Offgang. He is there. He's hanging out. He's waiting for me to come over there to him. He is a writer, the head guy, head senior writer of a Connecticut magazine. He's a published author. We're going to talk all about that. We're going to talk about social media. We're going to talk all kinds of, you know, the general fun things we talk about on this very program. And I look forward to having Eric on and sharing him with you. I know some of you guys told me you already followed him on Instagram, but definitely check him out. He's a good guy. Definitely more of a Twitter guy than an Instagram guy, but check him out. He's a great dude. He's going to be a fun guest to talk to, and I look forward to having that conversation. But ladies and gentlemen, in the meantime, in the between time, my name is Chef Lum. You're checking out Plum Love Foods Live. Hey, tell you what, listen, if you're checking this show out on Tuesday morning, I know a lot of people do this on the podcast because they can't stay up this late. Not like it's that late, Grandma. You shouldn't be, you know, you're in a hospitality industry. What the fuck are you talking about? You should be up hanging out at 10 o'clock at night. Anyway, but if you are, and you're doing it on iTunes, do me a favor, give me a rate, review, and subscribe there. I've been told I need to push that more often, the rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. It does a lot for the something called the algorithm, which I still should look that up because I have no idea what that means. But it does a lot for the algorithm. It's great for the podcast. So if you get a chance, give me a rate, review, and subscribe on there. Of course, if you don't mind. So anyway, get my ducks in a row, pour myself a beverage, and we'll be right back with Eric Offgang from CT Magazine. Stay right there, guys. You're checking out Plum Love Foods right here on Blog Talk Radio, TuneIn FM, Stitcher Radio. I'm about to say Stationhead, but we're not on Stationhead yet. But it's stuck in my brain now because it's all I've been talking about because I'm an asshole. Anyway, we'll be right back, guys. Hang on. We'll be right there.
True.
God, that's a great tune, man. That tune always fires me up so much, man. What a great freaking song. That's awesome. Rise Against, Injection, great tune. It takes me back to my punk rock days of when I was running kitchens back in Florida. That's a good song. Sorry, I want to keep listening to it. It's my jam. It's my jam. And you see, that kind of goes back and forth with it. Anyway, you guys, welcome back to Plum Love Foods Live. Just poured myself. I just cracked open another beverage, and I'm going to pour it right here. And our next guest is going to... He's going to make fun of me, I know, and that's okay. I'd much rather be made fun of and be honest, but I'm drinking Heineken Light, and we'll get into that in a minute, of course, and I'm happy to take the heat for it, but there's a lot of reasons behind drinking that said beer. Right now, on the line, I'm going to bring him on with us. We've got a gentleman who has done a lot for me in the culinary world here locally in Connecticut, helping to spread the word of great young chefs. Oh, I'm not really young, but... great chefs across the country, across our state, doing great things. And he's a great guy. He's a fun guy to hang out with. He is a fantastic writer, but an even better person. He's also written a book called Buzzed. It's Beers, Booze, and Coffee Brews, Where to Enjoy the Best Beverages in New England. My buddy, he is a senior writer for Connecticut Magazine, Eric Offgang. Eric, how are you, brother?
Good. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course, dude. Are you kidding me? I've wanted to have you on for a while now. And just I think you got so much great input and great insight into things. And seriously, you've done a lot helping me, especially here locally with some of the stuff that I've done. I appreciate all the support, dude. Seriously, it means the world to me.
Well, thank you. And it's been my pleasure. Always fun to, like you said, write about chefs doing cool things in Connecticut.
No doubt. Dude, what's better than that? You write about beer and you can write about food. Like, is there really anything better than that?
Yes, no, you go and eat a lot, talk to people, meet people, then write it up. Yeah. It's
that's it, right? How much free food do you get though? Like, are you just kind of walking to a place and you give them your card and like, oh shit, then we just better take care of him.
Not so much of that. I do get a lot of free food, but usually it's, you know, something, if it's a new restaurant, if it's a new, it hasn't quite gotten to the point where they see me and, you know, just throw food at me, but I'm still hoping one day.
Well, we keep that up. Listen, this book, man, I had no idea this was your book and you wrote this. I've actually seen this and I didn't realize it was yours until I just read the whole thing. Buzzed, Beers, Booze, and Coffee Brews, Where to Enjoy the Best Craft Beverages in New England. I'm glad you made a short title for it. That was good. Good call on that.
Yeah.
Tell me about that, man.
Two subtitles, which is...
Yeah. When did you write this?
So it was written, completed in the end of 2015, actually. It was just published last summer, but there was about a year as they worked on the design. You know, so it was written, researched over about a year and a half prior to that. You know, they kept asking me when I was done, and I kept saying, you know, I need to do more research. I need to go to another brewery.
Right.
It took some time doing the travel, you know, and there's a lot of places in the book. A lot of really cool places. So it was, as you might imagine, quite fun to write.
Well, it's definitely a cool thing to write about and see, man, because you know, craft beer has just blown up, I think, bigger than it's ever been before right now. And, you know, even here locally in Connecticut, I think we have what, 50 breweries or something like that now? I can't remember how many it is. It's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's something. I think it's over 50 or will be over 50 at the end of the year. And I don't remember the exact numbers, but like something like back in 2010, I think there was 8 or something along that line. Yeah. So it just has exploded. I know when I started writing the book, there was like, you know, my editor at the time or my publisher asked, you know, do you think there's going to be enough? And I was like, well, there's definitely enough. But even at that time, I knew that. But it seems like such a crazy question now that, like, you know, you could probably do a book on, you know, breweries in some place like Portland, Maine. There's probably enough just within the one city. And
that's
now
crazy.
Connecticut,
right.
You could definitely do a book just on Connecticut breweries.
Well, the cool part is, man, is that a lot of these breweries are popping up, and they're popping up everywhere. But I mean, bro, their beers are actually, I mean, they're not bad. They're all doing a pretty good job. We just shot an episode of On the Road. I had never been there. We went down to Thimble Island in Brantford. They don't get a lot of attention.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's great, nice. Yeah, they're doing a good job, dude. I was impressed with it. You know, it's kind of, but they don't get a ton of attention. So,
Well, yeah, it's hard now just because there's so many. It's sometimes hard to get the above the pack, but yeah, there are a lot of really good breweries that you might not get to if you are either not a fanatic about it or just don't happen to come across it.
But it's such a cool thing that people can go check out and see. And the breweries love to have people come. So can't push you enough, man. If you're in your local town, wherever town you're in, man, there's definitely a brewery, especially in 2017. Go check them out, man. Talk to them, especially if you're a chef, if you're a culinarian of some sort, man. You can even talk a little bit about food with them. They love that stuff, man. Am I wrong, Eric? You've done it. Like, if you can talk food with these people who make these beverages, they love it.
Yeah, they absolutely. And everyone's always so friendly, and it's usually, a pretty food centric crowd. So if you go there and start talking and asking questions about the beer, it's really got almost like that old school type of bar feel where, you could go yourself and talk to people for, an hour and a half you end up making conversation pretty quickly.
It does. It happens so quick, man. It's funny. The other week I had a girl from New Belgium Brewing Company on here, one of their PR people or something. And, New Belgium here in Connecticut, like, it's pretty new, to get New Belgium just, a year or so ago. We could finally get it here. But, I had her on. I was talking beer or whatever with her. And I had no idea that, they're still considered, they're obviously a craft brew, but they are the fourth largest brewery, period, in the country. I had no idea, man. That's crazy. And I'm sitting here talking to her, making dick jokes.
There's some of the numbers, some of some of the original kind of craft breweries or the really successful craft breweries that ended up selling for is just mind boggling.
Oh, I've heard that if you go to Budweiser, even where they have a brewery where just north of us in Vermont or something, New Hampshire, I can't remember where it's at, but even Budweiser tastes better at the brewery. So apparently that's what I heard.
Yeah. I haven't tried it with Budweiser, but I know that, sometimes, or actually a lot of times when for whatever reason, I'm not sure the beer can be so good at the brewery. So there's, it's fresh, it's at the right temperature. It's, made by the person who knows how it's, supposed to be served and that kind of thing. So yeah, no, sometimes there's some beers that I've had at the brewery and just absolutely loved. And when I bought a six pack and taken it home, I've liked it, but it hasn't, hasn't been the same.
Totally, totally. Well, it's a good point to bring up because I think, especially with food and great meals, I did an amazing pop-up dinner out in Montauk, at the very end of Long Island, out in the Hamptons, ago. And it was just one of those. I hate that you sound cheesy, the word magical, but it was a magical night, man. It was 20 people. Like, the whole wall, there was this long, big table that was cut out of some big, giant oak tree or whatever, and there's people sitting at it, and there's glass all around, and the windows are open, the air is blowing in from outside. We caught the clams and the oysters out that morning from the lake. Just beautiful, right?
Oh, wow.
But it's amazing how much the setting, and that can really set the vibe and affect how much you enjoy something. You know what I mean? Like, having a beautiful dinner in that amazing setting really made for a magical night, where if we did that dinner someplace else, it was a great dinner. People were like, wow, that was really good. But there, it was incredible. A buddy of mine who's a musician was there, and he's a pretty well-known musician, and he brought a little acoustic guitar at the end of the night, sang a song. It was nuts, dude. It was crazy. And like, it was one of those nights that is in like a TV show or some shit. But because of the setting and the way it felt, it made it such a better scenario, man. So is there places like that you've been, especially when making this book, where, maybe the meal itself would have been, okay, but because of the setting, because of where it was, the emotion it gives you when you think back on it really kind of set the whole tone for the whole place being amazing?
Yeah. There's a couple places, that really kind of, I know exactly what you mean. Cisco Brewery and 888 Distillery, they're kind of a two-in-one place on Nantucket, and they're they have this outdoor tap room. They have reggae music on the weekend, and it was just me and my wife went there when we were writing the book, or I was writing the book, and she was driving me around. not that day, but they just do the tour. Like at the beginning, the head brewer is like, this tour gets really technical, so just make sure you drink a lot. It's all free beer, and everyone gets hammered during the tour.
Oh my god!
Walk afterwards,
Sounds amazing.
It was great. Like it, and you know, and then you hang out, listen to the band, get, you know, there was some food truck there doing pizza. That was, you know, exactly. It was almost like that thing where it was like, it wasn't anything special, but it was like, it just hit the spot at the end of, you know, the day.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. I mean, you're in the water, like this beautiful brewery, and you just, it sounds amazing already. Like, I'm ready to go, you know? It's funny because.
Yeah, no, it's definitely.
Places like that on the water are so funny. You know, you think about if you ever go to like a boardwalk of a beach, of like a popular beach and stuff, how there's always ice cream stores. They're there because all the salty air, right? Salty air makes your body want something sweet. That's why ice cream shops do so well. So I'm kind of thinking the same thing here. You got this salty air going on. The pizza probably was a perfect fit.
Yep, yep, yeah. No, that's true. The I've heard that, and I don't know. I'm curious what you think on the that sometimes like the waterside restaurants. You know, some are good, but a lot are not so good. And I've like heard it that they can survive sometimes not being good because they have such a good location.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. I mean, if you have a great location on the beach, I lived in Ormond Beach, Florida for a long time. And there's this little shack. It literally is a shack in Flagler, one town up from us. And they serve, you know, basic mediocre fried seafood, right? It's nothing to write home about, but whatever. But you walk into this place, literally, it's like a screened-in porch that you sit on. It's on the fucking beach. The waves are crashing.
Yeah.
You're drinking cold beer. The waves are crashing. They're playing amazing music. And you're eating, like, hush puppies. And that I'm sure they just bought and they fucking fry them. But it's amazing. Yeah. It's great.
Think about it, the location.
Yeah. But because of the location, then all of a sudden they'll hit you with, we have a great fish taco special with, you know, Fisherman Steve from Flagler caught these, you know, these sheep heads, and we cut them up and made, who makes fucking tacos out of sheep head, but, and we made tacos out of them, delicious. And all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, this is amazing, you know? But it's funny how that shit works, dude. It really is.
Yeah. And I know with, like with the beer book, I had to, because, you know, with some of the maximized travel, I'd be like doing three breweries a day. I think one day I hit like three breweries and two distilleries. And you had to really do a lot of tasting rather than drinking. But I knew after like a while, like I would be like just discard my note on like the fifth beer in a flight, because I would get to the fifth beer and I've had like, you know, four samplers with pretty high alcohol content. So the fifth one, I would be just like, this is amazing. The best thing
I ever had. Damn, it's funny how that shit changes it, man. It's cool. Like, you got me all ready to go to the beach right now. Like, I'm ready to go to the beach. I want to go to this place.
I know.
I want to go now.
It's really cool. One of the you know, like best visitor experience, and really cool beer too. Like, really good to do some barrel aging stuff. Like, really excellent beer as well.
Nice. Now, does your wife like it? Does she dig it? Is she a beer drinker? Is she in? I mean, I've seen pictures of your wife on Instagram. You're doing well for yourself, sir. Just pointing that out there.
Thank you. Yeah. Married above my station. Yeah. Thank you.
Dude, me too. I'm a 4.5. My wife's a 10. Like, I'm fucking totally with you, brother.
People see us, they're like, what the hell?
Oh, yeah. They're like, he's got a lot of money or something. Something's going on there.
Yeah.
I just tell him I have a giant cock.
The chef is really, I didn't realize being a chef was that lucrative.
But your wife goes with you when you did the book, and does she enjoy it? Is it fun to her?
Yeah, absolutely. She, you know, she was always, you know, something of a beer drinker. I think she got definitely more into it as the, you know, as the book was written. You know, now I don't think she like drinks non-IPAs that often. So she got like, you know, she got into it. So she, she's like by nature a real like kind of moderate drinker, which works out because you know, she would end up driving as I would nap between breweries sometimes.
I would sleep off my drunkenness between breweries.
yeah, nap/pass out.
There you go. So how did this book work? Did you pitch this to a publishing company and they were like, okay, cool, go do it, or was it like a I have this done and then sell it to a publishing company?
Well, so it worked. Actually, the publisher company approached me. I was recommended to them by a professor of mine when I was getting my master's in writing. He had seen some of the travel writing I was doing. His name is Josh Behegan, and he wrote a series of baseball travel books, pretty well known. He wrote The Ultimate Baseball Road Trip, 101 Baseball Places to See Before You Die, and many other books on baseball travel. And they had approached him, and he was like, you know, I can't write this book. I like Coors Light. I'm not going to be able to do this. But he recommended them, and he, you know, he recommended me to them, and then they asked me to put together a book proposal, which is usually what you do for nonfiction books. Is you, okay. you come up with a proposal, which includes like, you know, a chapter, two chapters, table contents, some marketing ideas, you know, reasons your book's going to be better than other books that have been published on a similar topic. And based on that, they commissioned the work. So then I had about a year and a half to complete the book.
To cut you a little check so you can work on it. That's pretty cool, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Got a nice advance. And yeah, no, it was exciting. It was.
So just FYI, because I'm public enemy number one on Food Network these days. So you'll find this interesting as a person who's written a book and stuff. So long story short, I had the contract for Food Network Star season 10, right? And you know, the show, it's on Food Network. It's like the American Idol of Food Network. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but that's the show. Okay. And okay. I had the contract. Here you go. Sign this, and you're in, right? Well, one of the things in the contract, which is really really interesting, is you in the contract you sign. My lawyer caught it because it's buried in there. It's like 19 pages long. It's all like fucking font number 3. You have to squint to read the shit. But buried in there, you agree to write a cookbook for them with no advance, no nothing. You agree to write a cookbook, and you agree that you get like 10% of it. That's it. And they then take ownership of everything. It's incredible how much they fuck you over in this particular program. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And then they guarantee you, they pay you $15,000 is what you could pay if you win the show. That's it.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that nuts?
That's insane. That's insane. Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah, no, that, no, they're, well, sometimes, sometimes the deals are stacked against the people, but that one's not good.
It's terrible. I actually, our mutual friends, Dan and Christian over at Om Nom CT, I had gotten the contract and I was like, you guys are going to believe this. And I was texting back and forth with Dan. He was like, can I see it? I was like, yeah, I can send it to you. I don't give a shit. I sent it over to him and he was like, oh my God, it's sickening. It's sickening what they do these days. It's crazy. It's absolutely insane. And they call me every year for it, and I've said no the past 2 years, man. It's not worth it. You have too much things. If I want to do a pop-up dinner, I have to ask their permission. It's insane. They own you for 6 years. It's crazy. It's a 6-year contract.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, that's ridiculous. That's what, you know, the exclusivity clauses are even, I'll even like, I mind the royalties less than the the exclusivity. Like, I'll take a deal with not great royalties, but like, no ownership after work.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, it's probably better that way, right?
Yeah. The.
Good. Well, how's the book
tied down?
Is the book doing well?
Well, really well. Yeah, doing. Yeah, that's my sense. I getting good feedback, so it's exciting.
Now, can people get that book on Amazon, or is it just in like bookstores?
Yeah,
or can they get it?
It's available at Amazon. It's also in some local bookstores in New England. Cool. You know, Bird's Book in Bethel, Bethel, Connecticut has it. The Trading Post in New Hampshire. A bunch of other places too, but I forget them now.
Very, very cool. The book's called Buzzed, Beers, Booze, Coffee, and Brews, Where to Enjoy the Best Craft Beverages in New England. Make sure you check out. And also, too, while you're at it, if you haven't done so yet, go to Twitter and Instagram and follow our buddy Eric here at Eric Offgang. And I say it that way on purpose. I know it's Offgang is how you say it, but it's spelled like O-F-G-A-N. And you can follow him there on Instagram and on Twitter. He's a good Twitter follower. You don't do much on Instagram, do you?
Yeah, I'm not huge into the Instagram. My wife is bigger on Instagram, but I'm on Twitter a lot.
Well, awesome, brother. Well, check it out. So The book sounds amazing. I've actually, like I said before, I've seen the book. I didn't realize it was yours until like 5 minutes before I started talking to you. I'm like, holy shit, I have to look at that book. That book's awesome. But you know, kind of like your day job, your real job is you're a senior writer for a pretty big magazine here in New England, Connecticut Magazine. You guys have some quite the pull over there, brother. How'd that happen?
You know, I started out as a freelance writer. So I started out as in college. I interned at the Danbury News Times, and then I just, you know, basically never left once my internship ended. I kept writing and eventually, you know, started getting checks for that and segue that into kind of bigger publications. I started freelancing for Connecticut Magazine pretty regularly. For the 2 years before I was hired, and when a position opened up, I was lucky enough to get it.
Wow. Well, good for you, man. And you've been there for what, how many years now?
It'll be 3 years this March, so just about 3 years.
Good for you. And now, so it's interesting. I think you told me once, Connecticut Magazine is really interesting because the website is phenomenal. It gets a lot of views, a lot of hits, a lot of people go to it. But was it you that told me you base the content in the print magazine is based on what does well on the website? Is that right?
That was a little bit, we were doing that. So we would sometimes, you know, stories that did really well online would kind of automatically end up being, if we could being in line, we were doing, there's a big push within the company to do kind of a digital first, you know, we'd publish it for online, then see sort of take the best content, the most popular content, and put it in print. We've gone a little bit back more to the, you know, kind of planning for print and digital simultaneously. And it's a little bit less of that at this time, but still a little bit. We still do that. You know, we're still watching the, you know, how each story does. Which I think is something that you probably wouldn't do in journalism, you know, even 10 years ago. I don't think you'd be, you know, as interested in audience metrics.
Well, it's funny how your business in that form is changing, and kind of the same thing in the business that I'm in, how it's ironic, man, how many people I've talked to as far as chefs and whatnot, who when they get hired, especially at some of these big restaurants in the city and whatnot, how they get asked what their social media following is and they want to be a part of that. And because the digital is kind of the way everything is going. You know, I had an offer from a pretty well-known radio company here in Connecticut about 3 months ago, 4 months ago, to take this program and go to a daily show. And it's funny, man, because, you know, these regular forms of media that we've all grown up with and we're used to are just, it's a dying breed, and it just doesn't make sense. And I bet, like, with the magazine itself, it probably has a giant following online. Am I wrong?
Oh, yeah, absolutely it does. Yeah, absolutely. The we've been able to transition, I think, pretty well.
I mean, you have to pay attention to it.
It's definitely, like you said, it's funny that happens in the kind of culinary world too, where potential hires are interested in followers. Cause that's, I teach journalism, and that's something I tell, you know, people that, like, if you could have, you know, it doesn't mean you're going to get a job if you have 10,000 Twitter followers and your writing's terrible, but if you have 10,000 Twitter followers and your writing's good, you're going to be higher up in the queue than the person with, you know, 30 Twitter followers. And it's crazy that comes up. And obviously book deals, like I've talked about social media for every book deal I've ever had. That's, you know, been part of the conversation.
Well, I mean, that's the way that, I mean, listen, it's advertising that is, you know, I get given products all the time to tweet about or Instagram mainly about these days. And it's amazing how much, like, people, you know, it's almost like money better spent that way. You know, for instance, we do the Edible Project, people care way more about our social media and what we're going to do social media wise, as far as advertising goes, and then actually, you know, putting an ad in a magazine or, you know, what we're doing on with the actual video itself. It's pretty crazy to see, man. It's a weird time we live in right now, isn't it?
Yeah. No, it's bizarre. And it's still, I think you know, traditional media is still struggling to sort of adjust to that. I think some people, you know, probably some publications have done a really good job. Some have not and gone out of business. And then some are still like kind of in the middle, trying to figure out like exactly, you know, what type of ads they're going to be selling in the future, how they're going to sell them.
I mean, it's tough because selling that stuff is tough, but having great content is kind of the key. So I have a question here. I know that someone is on, I have a call on hold that someone was sending me a message they're dying to ask you about. So I got to go into it so I can get them to ask you, because I promised I would let them. Mm-hmm. But when you go to, you go to restaurants and you eat and you don't really so much do like a restaurant review, but if for events and things like that, do you take photos too, or do you just do the writing?
So what we do now, so I actually do a restaurant review, and then we also do kind of features, which are more, you know, less, more about the story of the event. And yes, I also do reviews, but I do photos for some of the smaller features. I'll take like a photo with my phone, and, you know, sometimes I'll get lucky and it'll be a decent shot. Sometimes we'll have submitted photos, and then we do also for the reviews have, you know, photographers we'll send out to do, you know, a proper photo shoot.
Right.
So it's a combination of, you know, what we can shoot, what they can submit, and then what we have, you know, the real professional photographers do.
It's funny though, because we all just have like amazing cameras in our pockets now all the time. That's what we do. You know, we always have these amazing cameras in our pockets. And we can take great pictures with it. And so I think that's what, let's take this phone call real quick. You ready? It'll be a quick one.
Yep.
All right, here we go. If I can get the button to work. Come on, button. There we go. Here we go. What's happening? 843. I know who this is. My good buddy. This is Chef Kevin Levine. He's down in Myrtle Beach there, Eric. He's a great guy. Chef, say hi to Eric.
What's going on, Eric?
Hey, how's it going, Kevin?
Doing very well, doing very well. Very impressive stats you got going on.
Thank you.
Chef, you got a question for him, man. Tell him what you were talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Chef Plum's saying, you know, today's society, a lot of it really is social media and digital. I cook 24 hours a day. I'm on my line. I have a restaurant here in Myrtle Beach, and I am very big on social media. And, you know, it's helped our restaurant increase sales by 10-15% just this year alone. My question to you is for pictures. My social media, because I'm a chef, is based around food. Is there better times of the day? Is there better, you know, when you go to do your print, is there better times to post a picture or a tweet, or, you know, when you can capture the greatest audience?
Well, it changes a lot. So there are times that there are more users. It's never entirely clear, at least to me. Some people might know better than me, you know, when the is the best time to post when there's the most users, because then there's also probably the most users is the best time to post, but then there's also the most posts that you're competing with. For us, we find that, you know, we try to do a post usually around 1 that does pretty well, and then around 3 or 4, those usually are stronger for us. We also do, you know, 1 in the morning at some point, and usually something in the evening. But it's kind of a constantly, you know, we're constantly looking to see, you know, did that post not do well because we posted it, you know, at the wrong time, or was, you know, the headline or too annoying, or was the photo itself that strong? One thing I find with, you know, with food in general, you know, the quality of the photo. So the more there's some photos you see that, you know, I'll see a restaurant post something, and I've actually like gotten up after scrolling through my phone, and, you know, gone straight to a restaurant to get something that I've seen posted. So, you know, the more kind of, I guess, you know, delicious the food looks in the photo.
Now, do you feel, in your opinion, do you think raw, like a raw picture? Not when I say raw, I mean just like not a staged dish. Like I'm on, like I said, I'm on my line cooking, and I'll literally grab my phone, and right in the heat of the moment, I'm taking a picture of what I'm actually serving to my guests. Do you feel that more compelling that you would want to go to that or something that's like staged?
I think it depends. I think that kind of thing is great. And I think, you know, I think if you stage it too much, then it's, you know, you, and you get there and the burger doesn't look anything like the burger I saw online, I think I'll be, you know, annoyed as a consumer, and as when I'm writing the story, I don't want, you know, we've talked about not using a photo or two here and there. If I'm like, I got that dish, it doesn't come out looking anything like this photo.
Right. I've gone to so many restaurants that I'm like, that's not the picture I saw.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like the, without the makeup of the stars. Yeah. So I think, you know, those type of, you know, raw, like kind of candid photos, those can be great, you know? So I think as long as the lighting's good, you know, the camera on your phone can capture really good photos. So I think that's great. You know, some dishes are sometimes hard to, you know, harder to photograph than others. You know, some pasta dishes, I think, can be difficult. They're not at the right angle. So, I think it definitely depends on the dish. You know, but I think definitely that, you know, some of that behind the scenes stuff is really interesting to, you know, followers of the chef.
Right.
That's for sure. And I think that's what Kevin's really good at, that about getting that stuff out there. He does a lot of Facebook Live with some of his stuff, and the guy's got a great social media following. So, Chef, I think you're doing okay with that stuff, man, when you're taking your pictures. But I always say, you want to make sure you try, don't have a window in front of you when you're trying to take a picture. You want to keep the lighting controlled as best as you can. You know, sunlight is always fantastic, but make sure the sun is behind you, not in front of you. I think it's kind of the one of the most important things, especially when shooting pictures or video.
Yeah, no, I think that's all good. Good advice. The what's the name of your restaurant down there, Kevin?
Scattori's Pizzeria, an Italian restaurant. Cool. I'm doing a lot of pasta.
All right. Yeah. No. Not all pasta is hard to photograph. Sometimes
it's true. Pasta is one of the hardest pictures. I mean, it is the hardest because I mean it's so four dimensional. I mean, it's tough.
And you can make it
like
sexy.
A bundle of, yeah.
What's that?
You can make pasta sexy as shit though too in the picture, man. You definitely can.
Oh yeah, no, you posted a pretty sexy pasta dish today.
Well,
the weather?
Go ahead.
The weather right now, we're about 63 right now.
Mm.
I'm sitting
nice. Nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
Me and my wife are thinking of going down there the last week in March, so we're looking now to see.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I will. I will.
You got to hit him up, man. The chef will take care of you for sure. Hit him up.
Oh,
get some pasta photos. Yeah.
There you go. Some pasta photos. All right, chef, man. We'll holler at you down the road, brother. I appreciate it, my man. All right.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much. And nice talking to you, man.
All right, buddy. There
take
you go.
Take care. Good talking with you.
That's Chef Kevin Levine. He's a great guy, man. He's got a nice following. I think he followed you on Instagram too, man. He's a good guy. He does a lot of great stuff down there. He does. It's funny. He's a guy who has taken his social media following, and like he said right there, he's upped his restaurant sales just on his social media following, which is pretty amazing, isn't it?
No, yeah, no, it is. It's there's so many, I guess, venues to promote, and yeah, I think if you're opening a restaurant, a new restaurant that doesn't have an established audience, or even if you do and you could up it with that, it's got to be a big part of the, you know, we write about, I should say, I end up writing about places based on seeing Instagram photos or, you know.
Yeah.
So
that's social media.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So listen, so let me ask you this. So, something new is going on, whether it's an event. I mean, you get tons of invites to things. People ask you to be a part of it, obviously, if you know, because they want you to come. But, you know, what is it that catches your eye when you get an invite to someplace, whether it's a big festival or whether it's a small dinner? What is it that catches your eye when you get the email invite and you're like, hey, you know what? I should go check that out.
You know, if it's something that just the food, you know, sounds great to me, and that might be, you know, that's different, I guess, for, you know, different things. But if it seems like, I don't know precisely, you know, a lot of times I like, you know, we're always trying to check out new places. So that helps. If you're doing something new, something different, that certainly helps. A cuisine right. we haven't written about. But, you know, if it seems like, you know, very food centric, so it's something where you're, you know, the food itself is going to be a real big component, that there's a lot of thought being put into the ingredients, that the chef yeah. is, you know, putting their name out there. I think those things all help, you know. And sometimes, like with anything else, like the, you know, the marketing kind of savvy of it might make, you sure. know, intrigue us or intrigue now, me.
Do you get to make that call? Do you get to make the call, or do you see it and you have to present it to somebody, like present it to like an editor
well,
or something?
Well, I do, you know, I get to make the call. Usually, I get like final approval on everything from my editor-in-chief, Albert Yurovich. But, you know, usually it's a good, you know, usually we see eye to eye when it comes to a lot of this. Sure. You know, he might say like, oh, hold this story till next month because, you know, you wrote about 3 barbecue places last month, so maybe you write about something else. This, you know, stuff like that. That's but great. Yeah, definitely a lot of leeway there. You know, it's hard because we're because we don't do you know, we're not a daily publication. We don't do a tremendous amount. You know, there's a lot of great food that, you know, we don't cover because we just can't. So we have to be very selective. Sure. So. You know, sometimes I think like anything else, like polite persistence pays off too, you know, just kind of keep sending, you know, if we don't make that event or don't check out your restaurant this week, you know, this month, you know, remind us again another month. And,
totally. And yeah, I think that's great advice right there. Cause I think a lot of people don't understand that, you know, sometimes it's not that easy to be able to come do it, but doesn't mean stop. Don't stop inviting me. Like we'll make it happen. Just keep asking me. You know, I think that's great advice. I think some people get so discouraged after being told no once, you know?
Yeah. And then there's I count they're kind of, that's like one side of it. Someone's like, you know, they send the one email, they assume, you know, cause I had a wedding to go to that Friday or something that I'm uninterested in whatever they're doing.
Right.
And I'm never going to be interested. And then, you know, I'm busy, I'm forgetful. So it just gets off my radar and I don't think of it again. And then there's a little bit the other that, you know, that's why I think the like kind of polite persistence is some people are almost like overly persistent where they'll send, you know, 4 emails, call you to see if you got the first email. And, you know, then you're like, you start to feel like you're being stalked. and that could be like a little, you're like, okay, you're a little too eager. But
we get it.
It's
we
the
get
other.
It.
Like usually, yeah. You know,
well, it's funny. I think that's great advice for anybody, especially in any state. I mean, every state has a big magazine or something like that, and any place you live. I think that the polite persistence is a really, really good advice from Eric. There, you guys should definitely remember that if you're doing something in your restaurant, like you want to have some coverage or something. Polite persistence. I like that, man. I like that. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought of that.
I just thought of that.
I'm like, I like it. Way to compliment myself, but I guess the other thing that's always good is like if you could have like those photos again, because when it comes to food coverage, like I think we all kind of, or at least I do, it, you know, you think with your eyes and like stomach. So if I see a photo that I'm just like, oh my god, I want to try that. Like that kid.
Totally.
You know that.
Totally.
I'll free up my calendar really quickly.
There you go. I've always said I think that you know people you know who spend too much time. We always say eat with your eyes first, and I get that, and you want to plate up and make the dishes look great. But I mean, I can make a dish look phenomenal. If you give me dog shit, I can make dog shit look great on a plate. But when you taste it, you're still eating dog shit. It's just the bottom line.
You've done that too. Where you're like, oh, I can't. And it's funny sometimes, like the presentation for me, and this is probably specific to getting, you know, me to write it, I'm not as interested in like the delicate, very nice presentation as I am like, you know, just like a burger that like just just tell it is like juicy, or like a pizza or something. But yeah, no, that's a good point. Some places just spend so much time on the presentation, the ambiance is great, it's a cool place, and then like you take a bite and you're like, you know, it might be okay, but like, you know, you're never gonna have a craving for it again. Or
totally. And I think you're right about that, but it's funny. You know, I've always said even that, or for me, service is a big deal to me. I mean, I think a restaurant can serve you the most amazing food on the planet, but if the service sucks, you're not going to go back. Bottom line, if the service is shit, you don't want to go back there.
Yeah, that's true. And if it's uninviting in general, so it's kind of the whole package, and it sort of changes for the type of place. Like I think, you know, a roadside stand obviously can get away with a different type of service than, you know, a sit down restaurant. And
totally. Speaking of service though, I thought it's a great segue into the news story for the night. And the guy who did Super Size Me and those movies, right? You're familiar with him, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Did you see the story about what he's got going on? What he did with his he made a restaurant, a chicken restaurant, and it's all this. He's making a new movie all about marketing and how places like Chipotle, Trader Joe's, all this stuff fool us by thinking that we're doing something amazing and going to these places because they have, you know, wooden countertops and green walls and pictures of farms up everywhere. Have you seen what he did? It's amazing.
No, I have not seen it. That sounds fascinating.
Oh, you're in for a treat, brother. Check it out tonight. This segment is called Off the Block, brought to you by HotBlocksCuttingBoards.com. The Off the Block news story for the week is an amazing news story coming out here. This story is crazy and it's straight up off the block, brand new, fresh, right here from the oven for you guys. Eric, check this out. Just listen real quick, all right? And make sure you guys, if you want to find a brand new block for yourself, really important, check out my good friend over there at Hot Blocks Cutting Boards. These guys are making the most amazing cutting boards there are. Here we go, off the block. Check this out.
I've eaten so much chicken over the course of this. What do we want it to be like? What do we want it to taste like? What do you want the texture to be? It's like everything. It's like I've eaten so much. And what is everybody else making? Like, what are all the other chicken restaurants doing? So I am in beautiful, scenic Columbus, Ohio for the grand opening of Holy Chicken, our pop-up chicken restaurant. It's going to be here for the public to try and for us to kind of experiment for the next 4 days. Part of what we want to do is kind of close the gap on where chickens come from. So now I know where they come from. They come from my farm in Alabama, where we raised them, where we fed them, where we took them to become the chicken sandwiches that are going to be served here. So the fact that we actually raise these chickens, it is probably the greatest farm-to-table story you could ever have. Yeah.
It's different. That's why I like it. Like, this is
so, okay. So let me just give you a little background here. I gave a little bit ahead of time, but this is amazing, all right? Morgan Spurlock, he bought a chicken farm in Alabama, okay? So you walk into this restaurant, Eric, and their specialty is chicken sandwiches, and you walk in, and the walls are green, and there's pictures of farms everywhere, pictures of chickens, pictures of, you know, Morgan kind of holding a chicken, you know, with a hat on, not looking like Morgan Spurlock, you know, they're like, oh, this is, you know, delicious farm chicken this restaurant's owned by the farmer, whatever, until you sit down at the table. And this whole town, no one realized what they were doing. There was a few people, the top time the story came out because a few people caught on. When you sit down at the table, there's a tiny little table tent on the table, Eric. And when you read it, it tells you these chickens are farmed in an inhumane way. They are farmed much like chickens at KFC. And that this is all a ruse. It's not real. And the restaurant sold out. For 3 days straight, it sold out, and people were interviewing people like, this is so great to come here, and the farmer, and they're just all over it. How fucking awesome is that?
That's crazy. That's great.
That's insane. That's the world we live in now. Like, people go to Chipotle and think it's great, you know?
Well, and there's so much, you know, that like
farm to table has become almost a meaningless word.
It's completely a
phrase.
It's a fucking hashtag. That's all it is now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always get like when people are always like, we're locally sourced or we've locally sourced our salad. And you're like, well, you haven't because you haven't told us where it's from.
Right.
That would be locally sourced. It. Just saying it's locally sourced
doesn't mean it is. But it's great, right? The whole movie is about marketing, and it's coming out, I think, in a year or something like that. But he legit went to this place in Ohio, this little town, set up a pop-up restaurant in a former fast food joint for 3 days, and they promoted this chicken sandwich that they make, and they sold out 3 days straight. And there's all these interviews. You can find them online of people talking about, oh, it's the most amazing chicken I've ever had. This is fantastic. It's so good. It's hysterical. I can't wait for it to come out, but isn't that insane?
No, that's great. That's there's so much, that of that kind of either misleading or downright false marketing. That's just amazing. Yeah.
It's amazing. I went to a Whole Foods not too long ago and I asked them where this fish came from. They said, oh, it's local. I was like, oh, great. Where did it come from? And he said, Maine. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's only 200 miles. Yeah, 300
yeah.
miles.
Great. I think at some point we need to put some sort of, I don't know, there's no rules on that stuff yet, and there probably needs to be at some point. I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
or else you're going to have Morgan Spurlock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you'll have Morgan Spurlock making a chicken restaurant.
No, there's some farmers, and I don't know, that like that say, you know, if it's not within 30 miles, you should be fine for advertising it as local. I think it's local to our planet.
At least be it from the same state, right?
Yeah.
Can we just leave the same state? Let's start there. Let's just start there. I mean, because we have, especially here in Connecticut, we do have such great farmers, we have such great food here that, we could say it's from, Lebanon, Connecticut, and it's not that far away because we're a small state. But I guess if you're in Texas, right?
Well, no, and it means something. Like at least Connecticut grown, or like if it's grown, where I am, and you too, the state. We're not far from the Hudson Valley, or there's
sure.
But yeah, that's crazy. That's a great idea.
It's awesome. If you get a couple minutes, just Google it tonight. Holy Chicken, Morgan Spurlock. You're going to see how much shit pops up. It's fucking crazy. It's insane. I read it, and I was like, this is amazing. This is amazing. I loved it. Dude, just to finish out here, and I appreciate your time tonight, man. It's been a great conversation. You love to do a part two here with you because you have a lot to talk about and even do a traveling thing. Just talk about some of the greatest places in New England you've been to. But you have another book that you're working
on. Absolutely. Yeah. The next book is actually going to be out in June. Totally different topic. It's about Gillette Castle and kind of the formation of the character of Sherlock Holmes.
Wow.
It's Gillette Castle's in Connecticut. It was built by the first actor to play Sherlock Holmes, William Gillette, who ended up giving the character a lot of his his elementary catchphrase, his curved pipe, and the magnifying glass. So really kind of played a big role in creating like sort of the Sherlock Holmes we think of today.
Very cool, man. That's awesome. And I mean, that's just, you just kind of do stuff from all over the place, huh? You write books about everything.
Yeah. I keep busy. It was definitely a change. The, looking through like 1800s newspaper clippings was very different than sampling IPAs, on a Nantucket beach. But it was fun in a different way.
Well, that's all that matters, man. As long as it's fun. If it's not fun, don't do it. That's my motto these days.
Yeah.
If it's not fun, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Bottom line. Well, look, I appreciate your time tonight, man. I got to do one more little segment with you. If you can, give me 90 more seconds of your time this evening? I know it's late, but.
Absolutely. No problem.
Excellent, man. So it's time to play a little bit of What Did You Learn? Brought to you by Ergo Chef Knives, the new shape of cutlery. Eric and I are going to reshape your brain with some knowledge and point out exactly what we learned tonight. Brought to you by Ergo Chef Knives. Make sure you check them out, ergochefknives.com. Use promo code PLUM15 off to get yourself a great deal on a fantastic night. I'm telling you, these guys do a great job. Eric, we're doing a dinner with these guys in April. I'll send you an invite if you want to come check it out. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah,
these
awesome. Guys are... I'd love to be there.
It's a great date night, by the way.
Yeah, I'll tell the bring the wife.
There you go. All right, so check it out. Tonight, I learned that much like myself, Eric, a highly respected writer, a published author, also finds humor in other human stupidity when they don't know what they're eating.
Yes, yes, indeed. Absolutely.
There you go. All right, man, you had to learn something tonight. What did you learn? Give me something.
So I learned that chefs are kind of as obsessed with social media as journalists.
Oh, good call. Yes, that's very, very true, man. Chefs are very obsessed with social media because it's become such a part of our day-to-day basis, our job. I have 3 pictures still to post from tonight just to show the food I made. You're absolutely right, 100%.
Yeah, so that's
a good That's a good call.
Yeah, I did not realize that until tonight. So that's I probably witnessed it, but I didn't realize quite the.
I learned that respected writer, published author, my buddy Eric Offgang from CT Magazine, and is just as much of an alcoholic as I am. That we were very similar in that. Except for he gets away with it by saying he's writing books and articles. I just say I had a long day.
Yeah. Whatever you get this. Yeah. Yes.
There you go. All right, give me one more. You learned one more thing. There was a lot of information tonight. There had to be something else that sticks out in your brain. You're like, you know what? I learned something tonight.
I learned. Let me give us some thought.
About a great restaurant in Myrtle Beach.
Yes, I did. I learned about a great, and that it's, you know, Myrtle Beach is a lot warmer than here, which I knew, but it's always good to, be reminded of that.
That's right.
And
that's
that
right.
People will believe not to trust any farm fresh marketing campaign.
Not to trust, just because it looks like it's a farm to table restaurant, that doesn't really mean anything. Make sure you read the fine print. There you go.
Yeah, fake news.
Yeah, right. Fake news. There you go. Dude, what a great conversation. I really enjoyed this tonight, man. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a great convo. And look forward to doing a part 2 with you at some point, man. I would love to do that with you and just talk about places you've been to eat and drink, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We should definitely do that. I had a blast talking with you as well.
It's an easy combo, right? Like I said, it's easy. You just sit here and run our mouth.
Yes,
that's all we do. We have microphones. That makes us experts on whatever we want to talk about. Don't worry about it. It's no one question. Hey, check it. If you haven't done it yet, make sure you follow my buddy Eric Offgang on Twitter and Instagram at Eric Offgang on both, which somehow he managed to get both. He managed to get like both to be the same, which is amazing.
Well, the name Offgang, you know, helps with with handle names.
You're right. I guess that's not really one that everybody uses, huh?
Yeah.
And of course, check out CT Magazine. You can find some stuff he's written there. And not to mention this book, Buzzed, Beers, Booze, Coffee, and Brews, Where to Enjoy the Best Craft Beverages in New England. This book is great. He's got a new book coming out, Gillette Castle, it's about the history of Sherlock Holmes and the castle itself, which is pretty cool, right?
Yep.
Well, there you have it, brother. I got all the plugs out, and I didn't even stumble. How about that? That was good.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
Anyway, brother, I appreciate your time tonight. Thank you very much, man. I'll talk to you on down the road, all right?
All right. Take care. Thank you.
All right. There he goes. That's my buddy, Eric. He's a great cat, man. Enjoyed that conversation tremendously. It's very educational, I think. Very informative. It really was. The persistence, it was some word there he said, something, it was like be nice persistence, but I think that's a really, really, really good piece of advice that everybody should take into account for when they're thinking about trying to have any kind of media for their restaurant and whatnot. So keep that in mind. Whoa, hello. Sorry, where'd that come from? All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to get this show on the road. Let me get this engine started and get this show all wrapped up. What a great conversation with Eric. I appreciate that. Again, make sure you check out his books. He's a great guy to talk to, a great follow, so make sure you follow him there. Ladies and gentlemen, big shout out to our sponsor tonight. Whoa, too loud. Hot Blocks Cutting Boards, and of course, Ergo Chef Knives. Big shout out to a special appearance by Chefs Kevin from Scatore's. Ladies and gentlemen, food is one of the most important things we have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. Make sure you give it the time it deserves. I'll see you next week. Peace. I came to play. There's a price to pay. Tough for you to get down on your knees.